Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Ron is not joining us today.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the host of Podcast DX.
Today, we are talking with Dr. Trent Orfanos, and I hope I said that correctly, about about functional cardiology for a healthy heart and longer life. Dr. Orfanos is currently the director of Integrative and Functional Medicine at Case Integrative Health here in Chicago. He's board certified in internal medicine, cardiology, integrative, functional, and anti-aging medicine, so very well-rounded. He is a fellow of the American College of Cardiology and the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. Welcome to our show today, Dr. Orfanos.
Thank you very much.
We're really looking forward to talking to you.
Yes.
I think an excellent way to start us out is to ask, what is functional cardiology? And is there a significant difference between my cardiologist, who I consider my circulatory system plumber, and a functional cardiologist? And do you consider yourself a functional, integrative, or holistic cardiologist? I asked you.
Yeah, those terms. I know. Those terms get, I think, are somewhat interchangeable. But I can tell you that my thoughts, when I think about functional medicine, I think about looking for the root cause of what's driving this illness that we've got. So we try to go back as far as we can upstream to find out what's driving it, what's driving the symptom that you're having. Let's say it's high blood pressure, high cholesterol, cardiac arrhythmias, heart attacks in the cardiac fields, and then we try to correct those things. And there's usually not one; there may be several things. And so that's a functional medicine doctor. Integrative medicine, functional medicine, sort of the same thing. We look at the whole person. We take into account all aspects of their lifestyle. We look at actually food first. Food's probably the number one. It's our first medicine. Hippocrates said, let medicine be thy food and food be thy medicine. And that was, 2,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. So this is not a new concept. Mm-hmm. Look at sleep, stress, exercise, our genetic predispositions, all these things that are critical to our health and how they work together to make that whole person as good as they can possibly be. So a functional cardiologist is really just simply a cardiologist who applies the principles of functional medicine to taking care of his patients.
Excellent. That's a pretty good answer.
Oh, yeah.
And what initially inspired you to pursue a career in medicine in general and cardiology in particular, and what made you transition to functional and integrative medicine?
Well, you know, when I was in school, I kind of gravitated toward the biological sciences. I remember I used to bring bugs and little critters home and show them to my mother. Now I do that, bring them home and show them to my wife, much to her chagrin. But I had that kind of tendency. And when I got into high school, same thing. So my parents were both school teachers. So I thought, well, I'm going to be a biology teacher. Mm. And I went to college with that in mind. I had an uncle in Indianapolis, and he saw more in me, and my parents did too. Maybe you can be a doctor. So he invited me down to spend the summer at his clinic. So I followed him around, and I took blood pressures on his patients, and I went to the hospital and made rounds with him. And it was a great experience. I really felt drawn to medicine after that. So from then I applied to medical school, and I got in, and off I went on medicine.
Excellent.
And then when I went into cardiology, the hospital that I did my internship in internal medicine was very big in cardiology. In fact, they were groundbreakers in stenting and balloon angioplasty in those days. They didn't have stents.
Okay.
So the first angioplasties that were done, I think in Indianapolis, or were done at the hospital where I was at. So I was like, you know, it's really exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. So I went off on cardiology. And what happened unexpectedly was that our first child, Marianne, was born with cerebral palsy. She was born 2 months premature. She had a very difficult birth. She almost died, and she, but she made it. And but as she progressed, as she got older, she didn't move as much as other children did. In fact, at a year old, she wasn't walking. In fact, she was pretty much mostly sitting. And the doctor said, "Oh, she's premature. It's going to turn around." Well, by the time she was 2 and a half, it wasn't turning around. We took her to a specialist in Chicago, and they said, "Oh, she has cerebral palsy, which is a brain injury,
right?
And she'll never walk." Well, you know, as parents, that was devastating to hear those words. So we couldn't accept that. So my wife saw a clip on a news station of a place in Philadelphia, which had a very powerful name, the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. So we saw the clip, and it was about teaching your children to read at an early age. It was about early development. And they had all these flashcards, and they had a program, and it was quite inspiring. But they also had a program for brain-injured children. They called them hurt kids. So we brought that up to our obstetrician, who, by the grace of God, said, "Well, I've been there. Oh. I went there to learn how to, so I could help my children to be, you know, smarter and more developed and learn musical instruments at a young age." And so that was it. We spent a week there with Marianne in class. We were in class. Mm-hmm. So it was a week-long day, you know, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., learning how to apply these principles to help your children, in this case, Marianne, to heal her brain. And in the meantime, they were checking Marianne. So we went home and started this program, and it was very intense. It was neurophysiologic exercises like crawling, creeping, reading, flashcards, intellectual stimulation, an organic diet, no sugar, supplements, and a lot of exercise. And now Marianne in those days could not move beyond just being able to pull herself forward with her elbows. Her legs were stiff behind her, rotated in almost to the point where her legs were pointing backwards, her feet were pointing backwards. They were turned in so much at the ankle. Mm-hmm. It literally looked kind of hopeless when you think about it. I remember my wife, Beth, said her prayer was, "Give me a sign so that I can keep doing this," because it was very intense, 12-hour-a-day program. 3 days into the program, Marianne, for the first time, was able to pull her knees up and start to move in like a crawling action.
Wow!
It was an answer to prayer.
Yeah, yeah.
So we kept it up, and it was 4 years we did this.
Oh my goodness!
But Marianne, and she was brilliant. I mean, this kid was speaking, and you know, she was saying words at one, and she was very intelligent. It's just the motion, movements of her. But she ended up, her feet straightened out. She walks independently, no supports, no braces, no surgery.
Wow.
Which is totally wasn't supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and in retrospect, looking at what we did in 1984, that was functional medicine,
mm-hmm.
lifestyle, mm-hmm. Nutrition, exercise. By the way, she had breathing exercises. She slept in a little ventilator. It was a little device that went around her chest that expanded her lungs so that she would get deeper breaths and supply more oxygen to her brain. This was functional medicine before it was called functional medicine.
Wow.
Marianne today at 41 is the director of the coordinator of secondary special needs children in the school system in our near our town.
Wow.
So that's what she's doing. She's an administrator helping kids sort of like her. Mm-hmm. So that's Mary Ann.
Wow.
I have there's so much to this. Mm-hmm. So that was very inspiring to me.
Sure.
Father-in-law, who's a family doctor, had who saw all this happen. He saw his granddaughter go from wheelchair, condemned to a wheelchair. I hate to say that.
I know.
To being able to walk mm-hmm. independently. And then he, three years after the program, he had a stroke. And he's a family doctor.
Okay.
He was partly paralyzed on his left side. He couldn't read. And his neurologist said, "You're done. You'll never practice again." So he began to apply the same things that we did for Mary Ann, which was actually crawling on his hands and knees up and down his hallway in his house. And he would read before he crawled and read after he crawled. And after the crawl, his reading would improve. He did this for several months, went back to his neurologist, who already told him, "You're not going back." Mm-hmm. Did the neuropsychiatric testing, and my father-in-law went back to practicing medicine.
Wow.
That's how much he improved with this. Mm-hmm. So I guess my message is here, this is very inspiring. Don't ever think that you can't get better.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something that's available. And sometimes it's really spectacular, the benefits you can get.
Amazing. Amazing.
You may improve. You may stabilize. You may improve. You may recover.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. So, so that's how I got my eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't know what this was all about. I just thought, okay, this is important. But I went on practicing medicine the way I usually did.
Mm-hmm.
2009, I wanted to bring wellness to my practice, a 5-man cardiology practice. Now, mind you, I practice interventional cardiology, heart attacks, angiograms, stents, all that really high-end kind of cardiology. Well, I was looking for a meeting, and I found a meeting on supplements in San Diego at Scripps, which is a really high-end, mm-hmm. well-known cardiac hospital. And I thought, well, this is pretty reputable, so I'm going to go check this out. At that 3-day meeting, I found out about vitamins, nutrients, supplements, sleep, all very scholarly. It presented to me just like I did at my cardiology meetings, very scientific, and it moved me. And I tell you, it was an epiphany when I saw that. And I thought, I'm going to do whatever I can to learn as much as I can about integrative functional medicine. And I began just going after the learning process. And my wife, Beth, attended every meeting with me. And we went to that first meeting. My wife couldn't walk from the rooms. These rooms were like out in little, it was kind of a big acreage area that had a lot of rooms out in the little woods, so to speak. And then you would walk to the conference room. She couldn't make the walk because she hurt so much.
Mm-hmm.
I had to push her in a wheelchair. Started doing the same things for Beth, functional medicine treatment. And she is better now, 12 years later, than she was then.
Wow.
Where we were worried she's gonna end up in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
No, she got better and better and better. So my daughter and my father-in-law and my wife and a lot of other family members improved with this. So that's how I found this, found functional medicine and became, an ardent supporter of it.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I know we actually traveled all the way, this was many years ago, but we traveled to North Carolina for their integrative health program, because there wasn't really anything readily available at that time in the Chicagoland area. And it's wonderful to see that it's available here as well. I do have a question. As a functional cardiologist, do you conduct the same cardiac disease screenings that we're accustomed to having at a regular cardiologist, like things like stress tests, cholesterol screenings, and electrocardiograms?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. All that's an important part of cardiology. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to test to find out what's going on.
Okay.
Know where you stand. And then we add in the functional medicine component to the usual conventional things, mm-hmm. to try to resolve what's going on or improve it or optimize your health. Mm-hmm. We don't shy away from pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. but ideally, as you get better, you're going to need less of those pharmaceuticals, and arguably sometimes you may not need them.
Okay.
But they're still good. They save lives. They reduce suffering. You know, the medicines are important.
Okay.
And as a functional cardiologist, how do you treat common heart conditions?
Well, I do what a regular cardiologist would do. If you came into me and you were having, let's say, a lot of chest discomfort with very little activity, to me that requires an aggressive traditional conventional approach to what's going on. We don't want you to damage your heart or perhaps, God forbid, die, mm-hmm. While we're trying to change your lifestyle and all that. However, those are the things that got you there in the first place, you know, the poor lifestyle, the lack of sleep, the high stress, the dietary insufficiencies, and the genetics and the environment influences on you, that got you there. But still, we need to stabilize the process. You may need some sort of intervention like a stent or something like that to keep you from going on and having that heart attack. Then we work on all these other things.
Okay.
That we thought.
Okay.
And when should we start thinking about our heart's health? Is this something that's just for later in life? Or
no. You should start thinking about your heart health before you're born.
Oh, wow.
And what I mean by that is, of course, you can't do that.
Right.
But what your parents do mm-hmm. will influence whether or not you will have an increased risk of heart disease, diabetes, depression, cancer, you name it. So as parents, we have a lot of influence, of course, over our children. Mm-hmm. So what we eat and how we conduct our lives and how healthy we are leading up to having the children conceiving and all that can influence their genetics inside the womb. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that can go on for a couple of generations too.
Okay.
So it's really important. Once you start realizing that, you realize how much power you have over your health mm-hmm. and over your children's health in the future. So yeah, and then your kids will follow your good example, and they'll eat well, and they'll exercise, and they'll handle stress well, and on and on and on, and they'll transmit that to their children, and we'll have a much healthier society.
Okay,
sounds like a good plan.
Yeah,
are there differences between men and women regarding heart health and disease prevention and treatment protocols?
There are. Women, women, I feel are more complex, you know, they're more complex hormonally, and their conditions earlier in life, like endometriosis, a lot of women have that, preeclampsia, high blood pressure, in late pregnancy that can be sometimes dangerous, even life-threatening. They can have gestational diabetes where their sugars mm-hmm. go up. Late in pregnancy, and PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, that can result in infertility. Well, all those conditions predispose the women to more cardiovascular diseases and diabetes, and so recognizing those early and treating these underlying metabolic problems, mm-hmm. and some of them may be certainly hormonal, they could be nutritional, they can be targeted supplements like certain vitamins, like for instance, women who miscarry may need more B vitamins. They may have high homocysteine levels, which down the line sets them up for heart disease and vascular disease in general, dementias. Mm-hmm. When you find that early, you don't miscarry, mm-hmm. you don't end up getting demented or getting heart disease later on in life. Mm-hmm. But having said that, we share a lot of things, men and women. We need to eat healthy. We need to reduce our stress. We need to be mindful of toxins in the environment, for instance, just to name a few things. We share those things. So I don't want to focus too much about differences, but we're similar in many ways, and a lot of the things apply to both of us to okay. be healthy.
Okay. And can investing in community programs that increase access to healthy foods, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains, fitness activities, including access to, you know, nature, and smoking cessation, I can't say that, programs help reduce cardiac disease in our society?
Oh, absolutely. You know, what kills us mm-hmm. and what makes us sick, I think the statistics are something like 80% of what kills us is modifiable, you know, mm-hmm. if not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we can't, accidents are, I don't know, arguably they might be preventable, but things like that are perhaps somewhat out of our control, mm-hmm. but our lifestyle and our environment is well within our control. So when we have community programs that foster healthy eating, I've even seen some where they have urban gardens put mm-hmm. up, where there's food deserts. Now people are putting up gardens in urban areas and you know, eating much healthier. Produce is hard to get sometimes
right.
In those areas. So, and we can get into the schools and teach our children how to eat healthy, how to stay active. You know, we have so many avenues. I mean, even the school lunch programs are arguably not very healthy. They could be made healthy, and then they learn to eat healthier foods. It's a process. It'll take a while, but I'm sure you could make a huge impact and turn this around in a generation if we take the right action.
Well, sounds like a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
I know that here in Illinois, the Governor Pritzker has started a healthy eating for children in school program, and they actually sourced a couple of new organizations that are bringing, you know, healthier foods.
Right, and fresh produce.
Yeah, fresh instead of processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully everybody can get on that bandwagon and we can keep you out of business in the future. Nothing personal, but.
That would be great. And, you know, cut the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
The sugar is a big cause of a lot of our illnesses. It's not so much the people worry about fat, mm-hmm. low fat. It's really the sugar that's driving.
Yeah, we had Dr. Joan. Oh boy, we had a doctor on last year
about sugar addiction, and how.
Yeah, our society is really, really hooked on sugar. Can we switch over to stress? our day-to-day lives seem to be more stressful lately. And what role does stress play in cardiac health?
Wow, stress is probably the elephant in the room. We talk so much about exercise and proper diet and sleep and all that, but when it comes down to it, the stress is probably most of what drives patients into their doctor's offices. It's some manifestation of stress, headaches, fatigue, worry, palpitations, and that seems to be one of the leading reasons why we visit the doctor in the first place. And stress is damaging. Your cortisol is a stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
When it goes up, your blood sugar goes up, your blood pressure goes up, your cholesterol goes up, and all those things are, you know, we can tie those. Speaking of root causes, look what the stress is doing. And we're treating the high sugars, we're treating the high blood pressure, we're treating the high cholesterol on this side, and the heart disease that comes from, we're not treating the root cause. Let's say, mm-hmm. in this case, stress is part of it. So the more optimistic someone is, these are long studies that go over like 60, 70 years. The more optimistic or positive outlook people have, the longer they live. It even trumps the bad lifestyle stuff, which I'm not saying smoke cigarettes and eat junk food and just have a good attitude. No, it's more than that, of course, every day. But it shows how powerful that is. Mm-hmm. But also, you don't want to be just, I don't know, the word is careless about your future, mm-hmm. because the people that also lived the longest were the most conscientious. You know, they said they're going to be there, they're going to be there, they get things done, they're conscientious. The ones that had the don't worry, be happy kind of attitude, mm-hmm. they died sooner.
Okay.
Of chronic diseases and other and accidents, by the way, too. So stay conscientious, stay positive, and that will, I think, go a long way toward helping curb the stress.
Okay. Well, speaking of stress, Dr. Orfanos, what do you personally do to help reduce stress in your day-to-day life?
Prayer, church. Forgiveness, gratitude, all those things will help take the focus off of, kind of the personal focus off of yourself and reduce stress. Okay. And I'll give you an example. One of the things that really kind of resonated with me as a cardiologist as well is something called heart rate variability.
Okay.
Now, what is that? So the heart doesn't beat perfectly regular beat to beat like a clock. It has a slowing, it speeds up and slows down in a very rhythmic, smooth fashion, kind of like smooth waves on a sea.
Okay.
So that's heart rate variability. Mm-hmm. And the more you have of that, the healthier your, not just your cardiovascular system is, but your nervous system, your endocrine system, your thinking, your judgment. And when it's the other way, when it's choppy and chaotic, when the variability is not even and it's jumping around a lot, now this isn't necessarily arrhythmias, but this is you still got a normal rhythm, mm-hmm. but it's not perfect, it's not smooth like a sine wave, like the waves of the sea. Those people and we do this all the time. We change from moment to moment, mm-hmm. from this from one to the other. Their blood pressures go up. Mm-hmm. Their stress hormones go up, cortisol. Their inflammation blood tests go up. Their cholesterol goes up. Their blood sugar goes up. And their brain, you don't think right, you know, when you're in mm-hmm. this state. You ever said, why did I say that? Well, you're probably in this, it's called chaos, good word, this chaotic state, and you don't make good judgments. They teach, and I'll tell you how we do this, but they even apply this to in businesses to get people to make better business decisions. Mm-hmm. Soldiers, so they make better decisions so they don't shoot the wrong person on the battlefield. Test takers, so that they perform better on a test. So this company is called HeartMath that I've done some reading on and actually some courses too. So how do we, it turns out this function of our heart is within our control. We can alter this heart rate variability. It's not like it's in the involuntary nervous system range. No, you can change it. And the way you can bring yourself into this healthy, coherent, that's the word, coherent heart rhythm variability, is a little exercise. This is one of them. And the first thing you do is you bring your attention from your mind down into your chest where your heart is. Mm-hmm. So you and this takes seconds. You bring it down into here. While you're taking some deep, slow breaths. And then when you've done that, then bring to mind a positive emotion. Now, what does that mean? That means you wanna activate, you wanna feel some positive emotion. And what are those emotions? Appreciation, gratitude, and love. you bring those emotions and you feel them, and you feel them down in your heart. There's poetry in that too, but there's physiology in it also. And you can measure, by the way, the heart rate variability. There's little devices you can put on your finger and your earlobe, and you can measure this. And you'll see your heart rate variability suddenly increase into the healthy green zone when you do that. And then what happens? Your blood pressure comes down. And all these things I mentioned, all these good things happen. So you're healthier. You're more connected with everybody else that in the world, especially the people that you're dealing with. There's a hormone called oxytocin. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of that?
Yes.
One? Oxytocin? Okay. Oxytocin in women is secreted in high amounts during labor to make the uterus contract so that they can have the baby. Mm-hmm. But men make oxytocin, women, not just women. But it also induces a bonding with, in this case, the baby. You know, so you just had a baby and you're flooded with oxytocin, and you're flooded also with love and bonding for your newborn baby. See how that nature, you know, is so perfect. It works so well. And when you're doing these exercises and you're experiencing gratitude and appreciation and the love and you're feeling it, you're secreting oxytocin and you are connecting with whoever it is in front of you or whoever. Really, all the people that are around you, and you know, you make better decisions. You're a better spouse. You're a better friend. You're a better worker. You do better in testing. You don't make mistakes as much. So you see, this is the beauty of this, because we're at our best as human beings when we have a grateful, loving heart. So this is beautiful. This is the way we should be. So that's heart math. That's heart rate variability, and the physiology, the psychology, and the spiritual part of this is, I think, very powerful.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, I know. I've read studies of college students who, before testing, are given a chance to play with puppies.
And
then their test results are often significantly higher because they've gotten that time to de-stress and everything before an exam.
Isn't that marvelous?
Yeah.
And not only that, when you're doing this mm-hmm. heart math stuff, this heart rate variability stuff, and you're in that state of heart that I'm talking about, and this has been measured, this has been mm-hmm. scientifically validated, you influence the person next to you.
Okay.
So they're picking up on what you're feeling mm-hmm. without saying a word. And then guess what? Your heart tends to become more coherent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it creates a feedback loop.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We've felt other people's vibes before. People mm-hmm. can say that. And it's, mm-hmm. it's absolutely true. We are affecting each other all the time.
Wow.
That's well, what, yeah, we keep a very happy puppy in the house just for that purpose.
Good.
Yes. Doctor, how do you maintain a good work-life balance?
Oh, I'm a work in progress, I guess. I only work part-time now.
That's
good. So, I separate my work life from my family and personal life.
Okay.
But I connect with my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my friends, so that when I'm with whoever I'm with, this is a goal. This isn't always a reality. I am with them 100%.
Okay.
So that's
a good goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. So, make sure you take care of yourself. You know, someone said you have to have courageous self-care. A friend of mine told me that, Camille, and she said you have to have courageous self-care. So you really have to take care of yourself. You can't let yourself deteriorate physically, psychologically, and spiritually Otherwise, you're not going to be any good to anybody else.
Sure.
All right. Well, yeah.
Well, Dr. Orfano,
we heard it directly from the doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll take that as a good prescription.
That's a good prescription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dr. Orfano, we want to thank you ever so much for taking the time to join us today. But how can our listeners learn more about you and your practice?
Well, you can look up Case Integrative Health, where I'm at now. They have a very good website, and they have a lot of integrative medicine modalities and to help you get be the best you can be. I do put some little 2-3 minute clips on Instagram, which then goes over to Facebook and on little functional medicine recommendations and what might interest me at that moment. So those are available. I don't communicate through the social media, so it's just for informational purposes.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Well, we're going to put links for Case Integrative Health on our webpage for other people to find you. Yeah. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
And I'm glad that you're still working part-time, because I think you're going to have a new patient soon.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll be glad to see you. Anybody.
All right. Great. And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com. You can find us on our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and TikTok.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.